What's up? What's up? Anita Marks in for Chris Carlin tonight, and have been all week long. Little musical chairs here on 98.7 ESPN. You can catch him during the day, and again, me at night here with you today, and of course tomorrow, leading into the 4th of July weekend. Nikki and Kai are working the show. Nikki's in the studio in New York. Kai is at home answering the phones. If you do call in, I'd love to hear from you. 800-919-3776. Please be extra kind to Kyrie. Nikki, does it feel like, I feel like, here's the thing. You know, I've been filling in for Chris this week. The big wigs here at 98.7 ESPN have been so kind to give me the weekend off, so I will not host my Saturday and Sunday shows. A few things. Number one, it just doesn't feel like 4th of July weekend. Like, I'm thinking about, oh, you know, like, my first reaction was, oh, I'm going to have the weekend off. Oh, this is going to be great. And then I take a step back and I go, where am I going to go? You know what I mean? Like, where are we going to go? Like I don't want to be in a restaurant. I don't want to be around crowds. You know, like where am I going to go? And then, you know, if you're somebody who loves fireworks, nope, that's not happening either. It's just, it's pandemic reality 101, right?
No, it absolutely is. You really have to adjust your expectations this holiday weekend. I know my roommates and I were thinking about doing this big thing, and then we all kind of sat and looked at each other. We're like, wait a second, not this year. Maybe we'll do all that next year. And plus, I feel like, I don't know about in Hoboken, we've been getting fireworks every single night for the last few weeks.
Yeah, but here's the thing. They're not telling anybody where they're launching them. And it's all from Macy's, and Macy's is recording. So get this. I want to say there's like five or six spots in around like the Hudson and East River that Macy's is doing these like surprise firework display for about 15 or 20 minutes, and they're videotaping them, and then they're gonna, like, you know, edit these together and show it on Saturday, but they're not telling anyone where they are, so it's kind of a surprise. I was actually hosting here two nights ago, and at 9:30 at night, it sounded like Hoboken was under attack. My dogs were going crazy. I had to go to break. Wasn't sure if I was going to be alive on the opposite side of the break, but anyway, I guess I just hope everybody's will still be able to enjoy a 4th of July. We've got a lot going on in the show, and I'm excited about it. You know, it's tough. Like, you know, it's what's besides the PGA Tour kicking off their fourth tour stop today, trying to win some money with Bryson DeChambeau, a.k.a. the Hulk. Other than that, really all the talk is, how are these leagues going to start? Will they start? Pertaining to the NFL, Dr. Fauci was on NFL radio, Sirius XM NFL radio today. We're going to play some clips for you from Fauci. So, you know, this is kind of where we're at. Bill Barnwell is going to join us on the show coming up in about, 27 minutes. For a few reasons. Number one, I think Bill Barnwell is I'm a huge fan. I think he's absolutely brilliant. His work, his articles are just spot on. And this week, he's taking a tour around the quarterbacks that were drafted in the 2018 NFL draft. So obviously that would include Sam Darnold as well as Josh Allen, AFC East. His Sam Darnold article comes out tomorrow. So I thought maybe if I get him for the show, maybe we can get a few nuggets from him before his article does post. Baker Mayfield was posted today. Josh Allen was posted yesterday, and Lamar Jackson was posted earlier. He's taking a pass on Josh Rosen, and understandably so. I mean, he can't even beat out Fitzmagic in Miami for a starting job. So we're going to talk to Bill Barnwell, expectations for Sam Darnold. How would he rank these quarterbacks? And also, obviously, we're going to talk to him in regard to Cam Newton. So what's the latest on the Cam Newton front? Well, he went to social media and pretty much said his signing with the New England Patriots, it's not about the money. Keep in mind, Cam's been in the league for 10 years, and he's made over $100 million. What is his deal with the Patriots? He's making a 1 year guaranteed. For 1 year, he's going to profit $550,000. His base salary is $1 million, and $6.5 million is all incentive laden. So what does that mean? In order for him to make the max of his deal, he's going to have to play a lot and he's going to have to start. And I've been saying this since the news was released that I do not anticipate Cam Newton to be the starting quarterback of the Patriots week one of the NFL season, not in this pandemic environment we're in. And again, I'm going to play clips for you from Fauci, who was on NFL radio earlier today. Just yesterday, the NFL came out and said, we are 86ing. If you haven't worked in the restaurant business, 86 means it's off the menu. So we are eliminating. We are eliminating weeks one and week four of the preseason. I anticipate, and I don't have sources, I don't think it takes an uber intelligent person to understand just how serious this pandemic is, how it's affecting not just the NFL, but also the NBA and Major League Baseball, and COVID being on the rise. I do not expect players to be able to arrive to the facilities on July 28th. That's when they are expected to arrive. That's when they're anticipating to arrive. I personally think that date will be set back. Hall of Fame game has already been canceled. Like I just said, weeks one and four of the preseason has now been canceled. I anticipate weeks two and three as well. Rodney Harrison came out today. Nikki, did you see Rodney Harrison's comments and his quotes?
I did not. I'm excited to hear, though.
I don't know how excited you should be, but pretty much Rodney Harrison, in a nutshell, said, in football, we sweat, spit, bleed on one another. How do you expect for a football season to happen and in during a pandemic? It's pretty much, in a nutshell, what he's saying is, and we know this, football, the NFL, is out of all sports, well, you can argue, but out of all team sports, the most physical. And it's not like guys are bleeding and spitting and whatever else. Rodney had a laundry list. It's not just during the game. It's practice. These guys have to practice. So he doesn't expect the NFL season, A, to exist, or B, if it does start up, to be able to finish. Because the physicality of not just the games, but also practice and what happens within day-to-day activity with players trying to prepare. So, I know I got off on a tangent here, but I think it's important because I have a number of people who are reaching out to me on social media saying, you're crazy if you don't think Cam Newton is a better quarterback than Jared Stidham. I that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that Jared Stidham is a better quarterback than Cam Newton. That is not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is Cam Newton doesn't know this offense. Cam Newton doesn't know this wide receiving core. Cam Newton's never, he hasn't even stepped foot. He's not even allowed to step foot into the facility. Could you imagine? What if July 28th gets postponed? What if Cam Newton only has 2 weeks to prepare to be a Patriots quarterback? So here's my question. I'll open up the phone lines. I'm really curious. 800-919-3776. Do you think the Patriots will be more successful with Jared Stidham, who Diana Rossini on Get Up yesterday, two things Diana Rossini communicated on Get Up yesterday. One was that she had spoken to an AFC East coach who said that Bill Belichick, Josh McDaniels, and the Patriots are in love with Jared Stidham, and that coach does expect Jared Stidham to start. So Diana Rossini reported that yesterday. And again, a big reason here, would you rather, that's a fun game, isn't it? Would you rather if you are a Patriots fan, let's say the Patriots were your team. I know it's really hard for both Jets and Giants fans to do that, but just appease me, okay? Would you rather go into a season with Jared Stidham, who has been within that organization, and by the way, won the QB2 job last year, went in as a fourth-round draft pick rookie, and in preseason won the backup job to Tom Brady last year. So would you rather have Jared Stidham as your quarterback, who's already been in that system for a year plus and has the tutelage under Tom Brady, to come in and start the season? Or would you rather a Cam Newton, who will be lucky if he has 4 weeks of training camp and 2 preseason games to start the season for you? Is Cam Newton's, and here's another thing, we are thinking of Cam Newton as vintage Cam Newton. We haven't seen vintage Cam Newton in quite a while, but and understandably so. He didn't play last year. We've seen the videos of him working out. He's motivated now more than ever. His Instagram video is I'm on your throat. Those are fighting words. You know everything surrounding everything we've heard and seen from Cam Newton has been, you know, exciting. But let's settle down for a second. Really think about this. And if you've played football and you know football, you know what I'm talking about. Especially on the offensive side of the ball. Cam Newton needs to come in. He needs to know the blocking assignments. He needs to gel with the receivers. Do you really think, and again, I'm being optimistic here, that he'll have 4 weeks? Chances are maybe he'll have 3 if he's lucky, and maybe he'll have 1 preseason game if he's lucky. Is Cam Newton's skill set just that off the charts in your mind that you think the Patriots have a better opportunity of starting the season with Cam Newton than with Jared Stidham, who's been in the system for over a year? And again, reports are that they're really high on him. We're being told it's going to be a competition, and Cam Newton came out today and said it's not about the money. It's about the respect. But Cam Newton can't get the respect that I believe he's looking for unless he plays. Cam Newton cannot get the $6.5 million in incentive money unless he plays. I envision Stidham starting, and depending on how that rolls for him, then we will see what happens once Cam Newton gets up to speed. Maybe that's week 4, week 5, and Cam comes in. That would not surprise me. But to start week 1 in this bizarre world of a pandemic, I don't see it. I just don't see it. 800-919-3776. We come back. We'll take your calls. Some other news in and around the NFL. One piece of news. One that came out today that really threw me to the point where I immediately went online and I looked at the Baltimore Ravens odds of winning the Super Bowl, winning the AFC, winning their division, even going 16-0. You want to know what that little nugget is? That piece of information that was reported? You want to stay tuned. I'll share it with you because you possibly could win some big money.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Without further ado, Bill Barnwell joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. He's got a slew of articles that are posting each and every day this week on ESPN, all about the 2018 draft class, specifically the quarterbacks that Sam Darnold is a part of. That's right. Bill, how you doing?
Hey, Anita. How are you?
I'm doing well. I always say, all things considered, I'm doing quite well. First and foremost, before we start diving into your 2018 quarterback class, thoughts on Cam Newton, and what are your expectations in regard to him in New England?
Well, I think anything's on the table in terms of expectations. I think he's a legitimate MVP candidate, and I think he is legitimately has a shot to not make the team. And I think every possible outcome is in range here. Obviously, I expect somewhere between those two extremes. I do think that he's healthier than people think. This is a guy who I think healed from the shoulder injury that he had in 2018 when he was playing some of the best football in the league before that shoulder injury, by the way. The foot injury should get healed by now as well. I mean, obviously, a new injury could pop up, but I think he's going to be pretty close to 100%. And I am pretty excited about that. I think for the Patriots, he's a player who gives them a level of versatility they didn't have last year. I really think that that offense lacked any sort of surprise ability. I think the Patriots at their best over the prior decade, because they had Rob Gronkowski, they could go big and throw the ball, or they could spread you out and run the ball. And I think because they had Gronk, they could sort of take advantage of both those opportunities. Now, by adding Cam Newton, you have a guy who can sort of fill in, not only for Tom Brady, but also fill in for Gronk in terms of that schematic role for that team, where if they want to spread you out, the Patriots, and then the defense wants to go out with four or five or six defensive backs and have to sort of deal with that, well, now Cam is going to have a small box to run into, and he's going to be a great, powerful runner. And then when the other team wants to come out, and face those sort of two running back or two tight end sets with their base defense, Cam is going to be great off play action and be a great downfield thrower. So I really think he has the ability to be an impact player. Of course, health is the biggest issue.
So I opened up the show, you know, Dr. Fauci was on Sirius XM NFL radio today and did not seem very optimistic in regard to where our country is headed in regard to COVID-19 and how that could relate to the start of the NFL season. But I opened up the show, you know, because we are living in this pandemic world, Bill, there is a chance that Cam will not arrive, and really no players will be allowed to arrive at the end of July. There's a chance that training camp could be, you know, if they're lucky, 2 weeks. There's a chance that, I know we've you know, canceled two preseason games. I think there's a chance we cancel all four preseason games.
For sure.
So I pose the question, is a second year Jared Stidham, who's been in the system for a year and a half and learned under the tutelage of Tom Brady, more likely to start week one than, let's say, a Cam Newton, who at best will have 4 weeks to prepare for the season? And yeah, you know, I know his talents and his ability and his athleticism is off the charts, but I think Stidham's going to start week one, Bill. What do you think?
I absolutely buy that. I asked Mike Reese a very similar question on my podcast, and he said it would benefit Jared Stidham. This is a guy who's covered the Patriots for 20 plus years, who knows the Patriots better than anybody, I think. And he said Jared Stidham, by having that experience, would have the sort of upper hand. And I do agree with you. I do think that, you know, if this were a typical offseason, I would pick Cam 9 times out of 10, because just the talent is there, the upside is there. Obviously, the Patriots do like Jared Stidham. I don't think that's changed given how little they've committed to Cam Newton, but I do think that, Jared Stidham is going to have that advantage. But of course, we know it. We know how fans can be. And this is a Patriots team that's without Tom Brady for the first time, heading into week one since 1999. I mean, it's been a long time since Tom Brady was not there. And I think if Jared Stidham does struggle, Patriots fans are not the nicest, meekest group of people. They booed Tom Brady when Tom Brady was struggling there. So there's going to be calls for Cam if Jared Stidham does not play well. So it wouldn't shock me if we saw Jared Stidham in week one under that scenario. But it also wouldn't shock me, even given that there aren't going to be maybe any fans there or some fans there, just given the attention that's happening, you know, outside of the stadium, on social media, on the radio. You know, and Bill Belichick also. Belichick wants to win. He wants to, you know, he's not a spring chicken. He wants to have the best quarterback in there. So, I do think that by week five or week six, wouldn't shock me if Cam Newton was the quarterback for the Patriots, even if Jared Stidham does start in week one.
And again, you could wager on that, by the way. Stidham week one plus 450. Bill, let's talk about your articles that are posted each and every day this week, all about the 2018 quarterbacks. Lamar Jackson, who I absolutely love, and you could wager on him winning the MVP again at plus 700. I know Baker Mayfield's out today. You had Josh Allen, and you're dropping Sam Darnold tomorrow. If you had to rank these quarterbacks, those four quarterbacks, How would you rank them right now?
Is this for, would you say, in the long term or for next year?
Let's say next year.
Next year. Okay. I mean, you got to go Lamar one, right? It's just in terms of starting with, guy was the MVP last year. And I think he's going to take a step backwards, not because he's not great, not because he's a flash in the pan, but just this is a guy who threw touchdowns on 9% of his passes last year, third highest rate in NFL history. That's tough to keep up. A very healthy team around him. That offense probably won't be as healthy in 2020. They lost their best offensive lineman, or one of their best offensive linemen, in Marshall Yanda to retirement. And Lamar could always get hurt. I mean, obviously, I think he's very smart with how he uses his body. He does a great job of protecting himself, but he takes a lot of hits. And that's the reality of playing any position in the NFL, is that there's going to be an injury risk, and he was healthy all of last year. So I think you're Lamar number one. It's a pretty decent-sized drop-off there. I would go Baker Mayfield, too, and I think it's less about Baker and more about just the talent they have around him. I like adding Kevin Stefanski as head coach. I like the moves they've made to upgrade a tackle. They were a mess on the offensive line last year. Baker just lost all confidence in the ability of that line to protect him and the receiving core. I mean, Odell, I think, is going to be healthier, and I think Odell could have a nice bounce-back year. Jarvis Landry is coming off the hip surgery, but I do think he's going to be there at some point during the season. You add Austin Hooper, not a great tight end, but just a very solid tight end. I think they're going to be very effective running the football. They're going to put less on Baker's shoulders. I think we're going to see a more efficient Baker Mayfield in 2020. Now, I would go Sam Darnold 3, just slightly ahead of Josh Allen. I know Josh Allen won a lot of games last year for the Bills. I think he is someone who has improved a lot, but just he's not there as a passer. And I think they have added more weapons for him in Stephon Diggs, but I just think he's not accurate enough. He really hasn't made strides in that space or enough strides in that space. Obviously a valuable runner, but I think a guy who, you know, you can't really put the game on his shoulders. The best he's done, Josh Allen, has been in kind of the Bills have won without him, where they've been sort of relying on the running game and the defense. And Josh Allen's been kind of getting out of the way. So for me, he's fourth. Sam Darnold comes in at third. You know, I'm watching him now. I'm writing about him for tomorrow. It's crazy. I mean, there are stretches where he looks like he is a absolute superstar. He looks like he's a 10-year veteran. You know, passes are coming out on time. They're accurate. They're in the right place. He's, you know, anticipating what the defense is going to give him. The throws are there. And you're like, wow, this guy's an absolute, you know, he's a franchise quarterback. And then the next week, that was the Cowboys game. He looked incredible against the Cowboys. The next week he plays the Patriots. And I don't think I've ever seen a quarterback look more lost or more shook on tape than Sam Darnold in the second half of that game. And he was firing passes out of bounds, didn't know where to go with the football, was scared, bunch of turnovers. I mean, he looked like he did not belong on the football field. And when you have that guy week after week, it's tough to kind of anticipate what you're going to get, you know, heading into what is a crucial year for Sam Darnold. So I like the moves the Jets made. I think they did improve the offensive line. They improved the receiving core. But I just don't think they did enough to make Sam Darnold's life easier. And I have to admit, I'm skeptical of Adam Gase's ability to coax what they need to coax out of Sam Darnold. So I think if Sam Darnold was in Baker Mayfield's situation, I think he'd be in much better shape. If the Ravens are drafting Sam Darnold, obviously a different sort of team, but I think they would have done a better job of surrounding him with the right players to succeed. But I don't think the Jets, and I don't really fault Joe Douglas for this, but I don't think like McCagden did enough to surround Sam Darnold with the right players. And so I think that's really caused him to sort of stagnate when it comes to developing over the first couple of years of his career.
Bill Barnwell joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Yeah, during the draft, I was really hoping that the Jets would draft Jerry Jeudy in the first round and then turn around and get Josh Jones. I actually think Josh Jones will be better than Becton at the end of the day, but only time will tell. Mm-hmm. Some people will call me crazy. But so before I let you go, let me ask you this. If you were a general manager and you could have one of these quarterbacks as your franchise quarterback, who would it be?
I think I'd still go Lamar. I think people, you know, I think what we've seen from Lamar as a pro, he's been so good as a runner. I think people sleep on how good he is as a passer. This is a guy who at Louisville was playing in a pro scheme, was really running a conventional offense where he just happened to be an incredible running quarterback on the side as a scrambler. I mean, you know, I think this is a guy who, even given the playoff struggles, He is so effective in both facets of the game. He's a winner. He's a leader. His teammates love him and adore him. He is just so smart with how he uses his body, like I said, to protect himself. I think he is not a flash in the pan. I think he's, you know, asking for annual MVP might be tough, but he's a guy who I think is going to have a long, effective career as a upper echelon NFL quarterback.
Okay, then I'll go. Then if Lamar's off the board, then who would you, out of Baker, Sam, and Josh Allen, who would you select then?
Ooh, that's the tough one. That is the tough one.
Did you think I was going to let you go without a tough question? Okay.
You should ask. You know what? You're just doing your job, and I respect that. And that's a good question. I would leave Josh Allen out. I think the accuracy is still hurting me there when it comes to him being a long-term option. So between Baker and between Sam Darnold, I think I'd go Baker just because we've seen him play at a high level. You know, he was really good in the second half of 2018. We just haven't seen Sam play at that level. I think he's capable of it for an extended period of time, but we've seen it for weeks or for possessions, or for quarters. We haven't seen it for a month or 2 months. And when we have seen it for any extended period of time, it's been because he's been playing some of the worst defenses in all of football. So I want to see Sam play consistent, impressive football for 2 months against good or very good defenses. You know, obviously, Nick, she'll play some bad defenses in there, but I want to see him do it against the teams who are supposed to be able to stop you. So I will go Baker ahead of Sam Darnold, but they could flip if Sam has a good year.
And your article on Sam Darnold drops, is it going to drop later on tonight or tomorrow morning?
Friday morning. It'll be up Friday morning, 9 a.m. So please be generous. I will try and be polite about the good stuff and the bad stuff when it comes to Sam Darnold.
Fantastic. Bill, always a pleasure having you on. Please know how much I appreciate your time. Thank you, my friend. Enjoy your 4th of July weekend.
Anytime, Anita. Thanks so much.
You got it. He's Bill Barnwell, one of the best in the business. We're really lucky. ESPN's really lucky to have him. He's just absolutely brilliant. That Sam Darnold, again, that Sam Darnold article drops on ESPN.com at 9 a.m. tomorrow. So make sure you check it out. 800-919-3776. We'll get your calls when we get back, I promise. And also, I'm going to have that little nugget of information in regard to NFL travel and why I think the Baltimore Ravens are just... they're going to eat this league up. They're just going to eat them up.
Our guys, I think, here so far in 8 or 9, 10 days have grown accustomed to this, to the deal and what we've asked them to do. I don't think anybody's going to be perfect. I think that there's some reasonable risk, but there's also a lot of things going on. I mean, the extensiveness of what we're doing, as far as, you know, player come in and clean in the court, and each player only has his own ball all the whole time we're here. You know, there's so many levels of things that we're doing to try to stay safe. I think we're doing as much as we can do, and I'm sure the NBA in the bubble in Orlando is going to be as safe as they can make it. There's no doubt about that.
That is Nick Nurse on with Golic and Wingo, head coach of the Raptors. By the way, I stand corrected. The Big Three League, it's Ice Cube. It's not Ice Tea. Thank you, Kyrie. Thank you for correcting me. I appreciate it. So, you know, here's the thing, and I get what a lot of NBA players are thinking, right? Like, okay, so we're going to be in this bubble, and we're going to be practicing, and we're going to be bumping, you know, we're going to be physical in the paint. Guys are going to be sweating on one another. But then once practice is over or once a game is over, now when we're outside the bubble, we have to stand 6 feet away from each other. Like, what? let's listen in. This is DeRozan on Zoom.
The ping pong thing time with the protocol. It's ridiculous. Let's be honest. Like, guys can't do this, but we can do this and battle over each other. You know, it's... That part just don't make no sense to me, and I got through 10 lines of the handbook and just put it down because it becomes so frustrating and overwhelming at times because you just never thought you'll be in a situation such as something like this. So, you know, it's hard to process at times.
You know, and just to give you an idea of what's in the protocol handbook. Like, as we know, professional athletes like to play cards. They play cards whether, you know, they're on a bus, they're on a plane, They're hanging out at the hotel. They like to play cards. Well, one of the protocols is as soon as you're done playing with a deck of cards, you got to throw it out. You can't keep on using the same deck of cards. Got to use a new deck of cards every time. And another thing that DeRozan was talking about was, you know, he's worried about everybody's mental health. Imagine, and here, you know, and I understand what he's talking about. Like, you know, we've been dealing with this pandemic since March. Majority of people have been working from home, whether it's you're working from home every day, or maybe you're working home 4 days a week or 3 days a week, whatever the case may be. But like, life has changed. Like, okay, I'm not married. I don't have children, but I have dogs. I have five dogs. My dogs are loving this pandemic. Nikki, you have no idea. I'm home a lot. A lot. Like, to the point where they're like, okay, you could leave now. And they're probably sick and tired of me being here. But I'm worried that once things go back to normal, as normal, like, let's say, hypothetically speaking, we get the vaccine the end of the year, maybe January, and our studio opens again, and I'm not hosting Sports Talk Radio from home. Maybe I'm up in Bristol, Connecticut, 2 or 3 days a week again, whatever the case may be, or I'm at the Seaport doing hits for Daily Wager. Like, you know, it was hard. You know, I had to have a dog walker come every day. So I'm worried, how are my dogs going to react? How are they going to respond? Once things go back to normal and I'm not here as much. So I use my situation as kind of an example. And DeRozan was talking about, like, our lives have changed to the point where, like, we're spending a lot more time with family. Think about that. Like, think about how our lives have changed. Think about how professional athletes' lives have changed. They're not on the road as much anymore. They're home. They're home with their families. I would imagine that a number of them have a different perspective right now on life. And either it's, oh, I can't stand this. I don't want to be home. I can't wait to get back on the road. You know, enough with the wifey, enough with the kids. Or it's, you know what, I'm not home enough. And the time that I've been spending at home with my wife and my kids and my family, or whether it's parents, whatever, you know, this is important time. And I value it. And I didn't realize how much I value it until now. I'm sure that there's a number of guys who feel that way. So once they enter into the bubble, now they're leaving their families for a minimum of 3 months. You know, for those players that are part of those 16 teams that are going to be competing for a championship. So, you know, I'm sure it's somewhat of a roller coaster ride mentally for a number of these guys. And on top of that, I'm going to play this clip for you. And if you've been watching Get Up this week, Stephen A. Smith, gotta love him. I said this 2 weeks ago. But obviously, this is ESPN. Mickey and Minnie are on our paychecks. You know, we have to be very careful what we talk about here. And I just happened to mention it. But boy, Stephen A. Smith went full throttle. And that is, the NBA in this bubble, players are not allowed to have their family members there for at least a minimum of the first 3 weeks. So what does that mean? You're asking for how many of these players? Hold on 1 second. It's not just players. You're asking for 1,500 people to not be sexually active for 3 weeks. Really? Stephen A. Smith is hilarious when he talks about this, but it has to be a real concern. Here's Damian Lillard talking about that he doubts players will be able to follow the protocols.
My confidence ain't great. My confidence ain't great because you telling me you're going to have, you know, 22 teams full of players follow all the rules. Like, when we have 100% freedom, everybody don't follow all the rules. So, I mean, I don't have much confidence, but hopefully, you know, it'll be handled to a point where, like, we're not putting everybody at at risk or in a dangerous position.
So much to think about beyond the logistics, beyond the protocols. And probably the one thing that I fear in regard to all this being derailed is players not following the protocol. Nancy Lieberman joins us next. Anthony in Bridgewater, I see you. I will get to your call, I promise. You want to chime in on the NBA bubble.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Nancy, we're really thrilled to have you on our airwaves tonight. Thank you so much for taking the time.
No, thank you, Anita. It's a great topic of discussion, isn't it?
It's fast. I'll use the word fascinating. I find this all very, very fascinating. Well, first and foremost, you're in Dallas. You know, I know you're very close to the Mavs, which, by the way, I had Jenny Busek on the show yesterday. She seems pretty disappointed that she can't go into the bubble because she's a mom. But nonetheless, what and I know that you are very close with a number of coaches and players and owners. What are you hearing? What's the topic of conversation when you have these discussions with coaches and players and whatnot?
Well, I think everybody truly wants to play, and they want to get some quality of basketball in. And I think we also have to, and a lot of people do understand, this is a business. This is a multi-billion-dollar business. So you have to hit certain thresholds to get your TV money. You have to hit certain thresholds to get your sponsor money. You've already lost the money from China. You know, I think 40% of the NBA income is derived also from, you know, that in-arena, that game day experience around the league. So there's a lot of factors here. The health of the players is up, you know, is at the top of the list. But what a 35-year-old LeBron James is going to do and what his motivation is different than what an 18, 19, 20, 24-year-old is going to do. I mean, in your world, I mean, how many guys in the NFL have snuck out the night before the Super Bowl, right? And they had hella security at the hotels. You know, people are going to, you know, they're not going to ask for permission. They'll ask for forgiveness. And it's kind of that risk reward of life. And some people will follow the rules and some people will make up their rules. So I think the greatest commissioner in sports, Adam Silver, is doing the best that he can do. He can't control the virus, but he can at least make sure that everybody is accountable with rules. I think it's 113 pages. Of, you know, protocol, and hope that the players, and I think some will, but Damian Lillard, you know, when somebody like that speaks, you have to listen.
You know, the PGA Tour started. It's really like the only thing that's happening right now when it comes to like real live sports. And their tour stop in Hilton Head, apparently a few players went out, and then following that, Brooks Koepka's brother Chase Koepka, not that they came down positive, but they withdrew. Koepka's caddy came down with it. So we're standing right now. We've got anywhere, I want to say anywhere between 6 to 8 PGA players that have tested positive, a few caddies, whatnot. But a big reason why was because a few PGA Tour players stepped out. So what happened was now you had a few veteran guys, older guys that now step to the young ones that said, what are you doing? Like, look at now the consequences. Now Brooks not playing, Webb Simpson couldn't play, one of his family members came down with COVID-19. And I just share this, and I'm using this as an example, because what's happening now, Nancy, is that the PGA Tour players, they are policing themselves. Now, it's one thing on a PGA, it's an individual sport, right? Like, there's only so many players, they're only in a tour stop 4 days a week, like, my brain starts racing in regard to like what players, who is going to police who, you know, is LeBron James going to have enough say where guys are not going to step out? Who would they listen to? Who do they respect? Like, how are they, because they are going to have to police themselves, Nancy. They are. And they're going to, and they're only going to listen to guys that they ultimately respect.
Yes, that is true. But LeBron James is not everybody's daddy. And, you know, there's Chris Paul, obviously, Andre Iguodala, you know, guys that are seasoned veterans who are involved as president or, you know, second in command at the PA. I think everybody has good motives, but when the moment happens and we're still, you know, what, 29 days away, you don't know what's going to happen. You know, I know a lot of guys, you know, what, three or four guys in the Nets have, you know, they're not going to be a part of the restart. Look, I really want to see these guys play, but I don't want to see anybody, you know, get sick. And here's the real problem. I know some people, obviously, is spiking in Dallas right now and in Florida. So you could be a young person and you can have the virus, but you're asymptomatic. So you think you're fine. So you do normal things and you go see family. And, you know, 5-6 days later, somebody that you've been around because you didn't think you had it now is having to deal with this and somebody else gets sick. So it's so tricky because it's such an invisible disease, you know, an invisible virus. You know, I've talked to 5-6 young people between the ages of, you know, 22 and 28 in the last week, and they have tested positive, but they have no symptoms. But, you know, they went just because they were at a party, they were at a pool party, they hung out. So it's something we've never had to deal with before. Honestly, I don't think the NFL season is going to start. That's just my opinion. I don't think the NFL baseball is going to happen. I don't think it's going to start. You know, there's too many people. There's too many players. There's, you know, how can you corral so many? And then you also have to, the people in the bubble. And now I think the NBA today announced that they're talking about, you know, maybe for the other 8 teams so they don't sit idle, you know, for 8-9 months, that they would have, you know, a little tournament, like maybe a little summer league type tournament, just so they get up and down the court. So there's a lot out there. What the NBA has done is absolutely amazing with trying to make this work for so many people. And I can only hope, you know, it's a player's world. And you hope that they don't get sick or pass it on.
You know, it's interesting. Again, Nancy Lieberman joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. And Golic said this on Golic and Wingo, and we've been playing the clip from it. And that is, you know, we haven't had a professional athlete, and God bless, right? We haven't had a professional athlete who has died of COVID-19, right? Like, seriously, like in the hospital, you know, on a respirator, you know, fighting for his life. And because of that, I think that there's this sense like, well, they're professional athletes, they'll be okay. Then there's the other part of this whole COVID-19 where, you know, even if you don't go to the hospital, you're not put on a respirator, all this stuff, you still might have some lung damage. And if that's the case, how's that going to affect your, you know, will that shorten your career 5, 3, 4, 5 years? We don't know. I mean, this is all like, you know, new to us. It's just for me, in my own personal opinion, I'm curious to get yours. Like, you know, why not just send the 16 teams that are competing for the championship? Like, I think the risk for a number of these guys, like you mentioned the Nets players. I don't think any of the Nets players want to go, right? Like teams that know that they really don't have a shot, they don't have an opportunity to compete for a championship. It's so much to risk, Nancy.
I didn't interview this morning, and the interviewer just looked, it was on a Zoom, and he said, would you play? Would you go to the bubble and play? And I said, yes, I'm a risk reward kind of gal. obviously my career has been risk reward. People tell me I can't do something, and I try to show them that you can. Nancy, you can't play in the Olympics in high school, and I try to show them I can. Nancy, you can't play in a men's professional league. I try to show them I can. Playing in the WNBA at 50 or 39 and then 50. So I have a little bit of a different mentality. But I think you're correct. These guys are strong, and I think they could handle, like a bad cold, a bad flu. From what I'm told, it's even worse than that. But honestly, I've had 6 friends die. These are guys that I played ball with at Rucker Park in New York who were, late 40s, early 50s, and they were just, kind of gelling with each other for a reunion. And of the 10, 6 died. And it's scary. One of my friends, he was on a ventilator, for 2 months. But we've come so far in understanding, and I'm not a doctor, but we've come so far. We have enough ventilators. The staff, whatever they were going through in March and April, we're not going to go through that now. We are so much better prepared. And how about this? I'm going to just throw this out. How about let's just social distance? Let's have a little discipline. Let's not get in everybody's faces where we're talking and the little micro spit molecules are flying all over the place. Wear a mask. I mean, if I go to Costco, I wear a mask and gloves. It's not the most comfortable thing for me. If I go, to Tom Thumb, I wear, a mask. I've stayed in my house. I've social distanced. I haven't seen some friends in 4 months. Quite frankly, I haven't seen my mother, who's been in assisted living in Florida. They wouldn't let me see her in February. So they were on top of it then. There has to be discipline. And Americans have to kind of pull together and realize that, it might not be you who gets sick, but it could be somebody else. So if we lead with love and kindness and consistency and discipline, I think we at least have a chance. It's a hell of a test we're going through.
Nancy, 2 questions before I let you go. One is, whoever does win the championship, I thought it was really interesting what Giannis said yesterday, because there is this, whoever wins this championship, as Giannis said, there'll be a star next to it. I love his Brazilian take on things. As if this championship is kind of like not real. And he said, polar opposite. Whoever wins this championship, this will be the most difficult championship that anyone will have ever won because of all that, the mental and emotional baggage that living in this bubble and all that COVID brings to the equation. Agree or disagree with that?
I 100% agree with him. If LeBron James wins this is going to be unbelievable. If Giannis wins this, it's going to be... There is no asterisk. There's just applause and celebration, as you said, for getting through all the hurdles that will be put in front of their teammates, their coaches, teams, personnel, and the league in trying to figure this out. Because I guarantee you, when we were at All-Star and we met with Adam Silver and Mark Tatum, nobody was sitting there putting an emergency plan together for COVID-19. And they have had to do this on no notice and just get the brain trust in and say, okay, plan A, B, and C. Well, there's a lot of pieces to this puzzle. One is actual games, then seeding. Then who gets in? Is there a play-in? Now, that's the fun part. Well, then there's the bubble and Disney. And do we play at Disney? Do we play in Vegas? How do we do this? How do we secure? There's so many moving pieces that, really the average person just doesn't understand the magnitude of if the NBA can pull this off and keep the players safe and the players with their family, which is, that's important too, is that the players have got to be able to be around their family. That's part of what they do. It's part of what they need. They need that support. Nobody wants to come home to a, you know, you've done it. I've done it. Nobody wants to come home to an empty hotel room every single night. I mean, we're used to having, you know, people around us. So there's a lot of give and take.
Absolutely, Nancy. Unfortunately, we lost Anita, but I want to thank you so much for coming on. I really, really appreciate it. Guys, thank you very much.
You're awesome. Way to slip in there so quickly.
Thank you. Thank you so
nimble,
much.
Nimble you are. This
I
is
try.
Great. Hey, thank you.
Have a great holiday weekend. Thank you.
All right, you guys. Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Here's Stephen A. Smith from earlier today.
Nike, FedEx, and PepsiCo elect to pull their support of the Redskins franchise. Unless Dan Snyder is going to change the name, then he will change the name because it's about money. It's always been about money, and that's the reality of the situation. We could call Dan Snyder insensitive. We can call him a lot of different things because of his refusal to change the name. But we can't do that by avoiding to discuss reality. The reality is that he thought having the name would be financially beneficial to him. And as a result of that, because of the marketability of the quote unquote Washington Redskins brand, it would affect his bottom line if he changed it. That's why he didn't do it. And that's why he's held on to it so doggedly.
That is Stephen A. Smith. Bram, welcome in. Appreciate
hey, Anita,
your time this evening, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I always say, all things considered, I'm blessed.
Yeah.
You know, healthy, employed, playing golf, tennis, hiking, trying to be as active and attractive as possible.
Yeah, listen, I'm doing everything out of my basement. So, you know, welcome to pandemic land, sports world with no sports. We're doing what we can do.
Well, let's dive into what's going on with the Washington Redskins. You know, the Black Lives Matter movement, social injustice, all that, you know, this movement and we've been feeling and focusing on, could this be the thing that kind of catapults Dan Snyder in Washington to change its name?
I'm with Stephen A. Smith. They're being forced to do so. I don't think they had any intention of doing so. They have weathered. It's not the first time, as you would imagine, that this has come up. In fact, a few years ago, there was a pretty strong drumbeat to make the change. They waited it out. They always have. Dan Snyder was emphatic and said in capital letters, I will never change the name. But I'm with Stephen A. here. Really, the bottom line is, if you really wanted that change to occur, it's going to come to their bottom line. And the people you really should be complaining to directly is the NFL. And the NFL has been complicit in allowing them to keep the name for as long as they have. But I do believe this is the first time I actually really believe this. And I grew up here. And I'm, you know, unapologetically a fan of the team and was a season ticket holder for years. I believe this is the first time that you are going to hear an announcement within, I don't know how long, but soon, that they are going to change the name of the team because of the sponsors essentially demanding it.
And the sponsors being Nike, FedEx, Pepsi, from what I understand, shareholders that are worth over $600 billion, 87 investment firms. On top of that, kind of explain the stadium situation, right? Like the stadium, new stadium, and apparently relocation. It's land owned by the federal government, and the government potentially is getting involved and saying, you want our land, you want a new stadium, you're going to have to change your name as well.
Yeah. So there's a couple things. There's like two major things happened over the last like 24, 48 hours. So the first was this email that got leaked to Adweek that there was 87 venture capitalist firms that are embedded with major corporations that have asked the major corporations that are specifically linked to the Redskins to change the name of the team or ask them to do so. Now, what's important in that email is there is no actual, if you don't, we will do this. So to me, my first read of it was, this is a lot of talk. And until they actually say, we are going to pull some level of investment or not fund something else with Nike or PepsiCo, then, you know, until that happens, they're going to weather a storm again and wait to see if the news cycle changes and the NFL backs them on it. That said, later this evening, Federal Express put out a statement, and FedEx, of course, is FedEx Field, and FedEx is run by Fred Smith, who happens to be a minority owner of the team. So that is a very big deal that they put out a statement saying, we're asking you to do so. Now, again, they didn't say we're going to pull the name off of the stadium. They have the stadium naming rights for another 5 years or so. And so until they actually say that, you know, I'm not completely certain that that's what it's going to be, but I'm fairly certain that it's heading that direction. As for their new stadium, like, they have been looking, they are going to move out of FedEx Field. It is not a great venue. And there are two things here in Dan Snyder's defense that he inherited when he bought the team: FedEx Field, which was originally Jack Kent Cook Stadium, and the name of the team. He didn't name them. He didn't have this stadium. So these are two of the major issues that his legacy is going to ultimately be founded on, and what he does in both of these situations. They want to go back to the RFK site. The RFK site is owned by the federal government. Nothing has happened there. There's been a tremendous amount of development in and around the city, including where the Nationals built a ballpark, where DC United built a ballpark. And this is about 140 acres of waterfront property that has had nothing happen on it but a dilapidated stadium and a parking lot and no redevelopment. The DC government has tried for years to get the land to do what they please with it. But the federal government has to authorize that, whether it's either sell it to the district for market value or lease it to them. They could do this, but the people in charge of that have said on the record that we're not willing to do so because we believe that you are going to either lease it or sell it to Dan Snyder, and we object to the name of the team. If he changes the name of the team, then we can have a conversation about giving you the land. So there's a number of steps that would need to occur for them to move back to RFK and build a new stadium. And there's other things that are happening here, too. Like, the district, DC Events, have put out a very formal, loud bid to try to be part of World Cup 2026. Having a new modern stadium that could house soccer matches at that site would be an attractive thing as well. So DC wants a stadium there. They want the Redskins back. They don't want the name. And so the federal government has basically told the DC government, we're not even going to give it to you because we know what you're going to do with it, which is redevelop it and package it for the football team to have a stadium there, even of the objection of the neighbors who live in the area. They're not going to have ultimately the say in it. But by saying that the name is the impediment, it is further pushed this. If Dan Snyder wants to go back to RFK, where everyone here, I think, universally thinks they belong, they're going to have to do something about the name. Again, Maryland and Virginia are both willing participants to give him a stadium, not at FedEx Field or that site, but somewhere else. And you're right, he owns the land at FedEx Field, so he stands to sell that property back to the state and then turn around and probably get some kind of sweetheart deal either in Maryland or Virginia. But everybody, and I think he, because it's important to him, like, he grew up a fan. He understands the legacy of the team. He knows they belong back at RFK. He wants a new modern stadium. People have fleed the stadium. The attendance has become a huge problem for a team that never had that. And so it is time for them to move. And not only that, I mean, they have a new coach, a new quarterback. They're probably going to update their look pretty soon. I mean, the time really is now. And then put the social issues that are at the forefront as well. The time really is now to really consider this. So I don't think it's tough talk that's going to have no action this time. After FedEx made the statement they made, I'm pretty convinced that for the first time, like, this is real, and they are probably going to be forced into changing the name.
Bram Weinstein joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Okay, with that being said, Bram, is this topic of conversation has happened time and time again. How is that new naming? Let's say, hypothetically speaking, Dan is on board and he says, okay, we're going to change the name. Is he going to let the fans recommend a new name? Like, how will that name be decided?
I don't know. So, I mean, that's a big, you know, that's a big, like, up in the air question. You know, being what this year may or may not be, you know, there are some in this area that are going, you know what, if they're going to change the name, this is the year to just go blank, call yourselves the Washington Football Team, and give yourself a year to rebrand yourself when everybody hopes optimistically we come back to a normal life again and normal cycles and have football in packed stadiums again next fall. I don't know that he would go that direction because it seems very soon to like all of a sudden just change a name and change uniforms and change all of that stuff. So I doubt you would see it, you know, take place in the near term. But I do believe that there will be some level of announcement that they plan on doing it. And they already, this was years ago, they had copyrighted the name Warriors. So that is a possibility that that could be the team name. And, you know, it doesn't mean they have to, you know, that's, they just copyrighted the name for the sake of having it as a possibility. So I don't know
Warriors?
What they're going to do. Yeah, I don't, listen, like, you know, in the end, when you really think about it, like we're changing the name of one of the landmark franchises of the league. It's a really big deal. And it, I've always kind of been interested in, you know, we look at it so in such an insular way here about what it means and what it stands for and what the brand looks like to everyone on the outside. And I've always been kind of curious, like, what do people in Philadelphia, New York, and Dallas, who are the rivals of this team, what do they think about it, that they're going to be playing, no longer be playing the Washington Redskins? I'm not sure that that ultimately matters, but I'm sure they have some kind of opinion on that.
This is very, very, very interesting. And, you know, it's sometimes I just, the where we are right now, it's like it's the pandemic is a lot to deal with. And Black Lives Matter, that movement, a very powerful movement, is a lot. And for both these things to be happening at the same time, Bram,
yeah,
is just a wild time right now in our country.
Yeah, and they've had a couple of other things that have happened recently. You probably followed, like George Preston Marshall was, you know, an owner. He was a segregationist. He was the last to integrate the team. He did not want a black player on the team. Bobby Mitchell eventually was traded for and brought in here. It was a very difficult transition. He just recently passed away. George Preston Marshall, there was a statue of him outside of RFK Stadium that got defaced during the movement, so they removed it. The Redskins then quickly, the lower level of FedEx Field was named after George Preston Marshall. They removed that name from it. They're going to take him out of the Ring of Fame. They renamed the lower level Bobby Mitchell, lower level FedEx Field. And so some of this stuff has already started to happen. And when they started doing this, you know, it was clearly an easy target for others to look at and go, okay, but the big elephant in the room is the name of the team. And you've really, if you really want to make a statement, you really want to have progress in 2020, it is time to do something about it. And listen, I worked not directly, but semi-indirectly for the organization. I was part of their broadcast team for a few years. I worked for a station that was owned directly by Dan Snyder. We had a lot of independence, but regardless, the checks were written from the Washington Redskins to us. So I know the organization intimately. And, you know, this will never come out right. But, like, trust me when I say this. Like, the intention is not there to be openly racist. Like, that's not how they view the word. It's not how they view the legacy of the team. It's not the image that they're trying to create. That said, you know, it is a slur. But what I do know is this, like the do the right thing argument has not, will not, and is falling on deaf ears out there. It won't work. So it's going to come down to the finances. And if companies like FedEx take their name off the stadium, and if Nike will no longer outfit them, and PepsiCo will no longer serve soft drinks at their stadium, that is a really, really, really big deal because there will be pressure, obviously, from others not to replace them. And that's where I think things will ultimately change. And the ball is rolling that way. And the minority owner of the team's company, like, put out a statement saying you should change the name. That is that's a landmark moment that I think they're not going to be able to overcome. And so I don't know what the name's going to be, and I don't know when they would name it. And I know Dan Snyder does not want to do this, but the levers of financial power have finally been pulled to a point where I believe you're going to see a change come.
Bram, before we let you go, just talking about obviously the Black Lives Matter movement and the video that we saw not too long ago from Roger Goodell, we really haven't heard from a lot of owners. Of course, we heard from Steve Bisciotti, no surprise there, right? But we haven't heard from like the big name owners. We haven't seen a video from Mara. We haven't seen a video from Jerry Jones. Do you, what's the feel and the vibe in around Dan Snyder? Like, is Dan Snyder an owner that is going to support players kneeling? Do you, you know, would this, would he be an owner that would go out there and kneel with his players? Like what can fans expect from Dan Snyder this year?
So, like, a video statement, I would be surprised. Like, he does very little media. He does very few interviews. He almost can't win with it. He is not someone that has a very good reputation around here. And whenever he does anything, it is like every word is just parsed out. So I don't expect him to do a statement about any of that. That said, you know, like Dwayne Haskins and Doug Williams, who's part of the front office of the team, went and took part in the protests that were going on here a few weeks ago, as some of the other athletes here did. There was no objection, but them not putting out a statement about it, I'm not particularly surprised. And I don't think it's an indication really one way or the other about how he may feel about the social issues. He just isn't that type of owner. Like when you mentioned Jerry Jones, Jerry Jones is as visible as anybody in sports from an ownership position. There is like a question of why aren't you talking about this? When Dan Snyder doesn't address something, well, he doesn't really address anything. So for me to like honestly answer what's in his head about it, I don't know, because mainly he doesn't really communicate with the fan base. He doesn't really communicate with the media here or nationally for that matter. So in the rare occurrence that he does, it typically there is some kind of charitable facet to it, like breast cancer. He's a cancer survivor himself. In a social issue, I would have been surprised if the Redskins or specifically Dan had put something out, and of course they didn't.
Interesting. Last one for you, I promise. Ron Rivera came out this week in regard to the Cam Newton going to the Patriots storyline and said, don't count him out. If that's the case, I mean, there weren't a number of teams that were interested in Cam Newton. You know, Dwayne Haskins hasn't like blown the doors off of anyone. Why didn't Ron inquire, or did he? Do we, like, in regard to bringing Cam to Washington?
So he said he's thought about it, and of course he should have. I mean, he had the direct relationship with him, and they just organizationally decided that they want this year to be a year where they find out what they have specifically in Haskins. And they felt like had they brought him in, I mean, assuming his health, like that he's back to the way he was a couple of years ago through all the injuries he's had, there is not a shred of doubt in my mind that he would win the job here. Like, I mean, I wouldn't see a path, not off of the way Haskins played in his rookie season. There's a lot of hope and a lot of hype off of things that have seen and would have been said about Haskins in this offseason about how he lost weight, how he's looked good in these videos. The coaches love him. But what ended up ultimately happening was Ron Rivera decided that he was going to give Dwayne Haskins the year, and it was going to be an open lane for him. So they went and got Kyle Allen, who knows the offense, but clearly is not near the talent level of Dwayne Haskins. So he's not a real competitor for the starting spot. So they're giving him every chance to win the job and be the guy. And, you know, this was a handpicked player who was local, you know, that the owner wanted against the wishes of the outgoing head coach. That was a mess a year ago with the coach not really helping him along, and it stunted his ability to get better. But as the season progressed, when he finally got a chance, once the season was lost and they started playing him, there was improvement. It, you know, like I talked to one of your colleagues, Jordan Renan, on my show, you know, last year when they played the Giants late in the year. And we had this conversation and I felt it was like apt. He said, you know, with Daniel Jones, like, we don't know what the ceiling is, but we do know what the floor is. Like, he's not a bust. Like, we know that, you know. Can you say the same thing about Haskins? And the truth is we kind of can't. Like, there's a lot of hope and a lot of belief because he's got a lot of natural talent. But there's a long way to go. And they're hoping and praying, really, that they've got the right guy. And so they're going to give him every opportunity to do it. And they made that decision very early. I mean, think about how many other quarterbacks are out there that they could have gone after. And think about, you know, how they've approached free agency in the past, where they don't get beat out on contracts by anybody. They could have gotten just about anybody but Tom Brady if they really wanted to, and they chose not to. Now, I think in the end, with what Cam signed for, it seems kind of like, wow, like, why wouldn't you bring him in if that's what the cost was? What do you have to lose other than potentially the confidence in Haskins. And so they've decided they're going to roll with Dwayne and see how it goes, and we'll see where we are next year, assuming that they actually play the games.
Great stuff. Bram, thank you so much for joining us. Really do appreciate your time, especially this late on a Thursday night from your basement.
Yeah, my pleasure. Always great talking to you, Anita.
You got it. You're the best. Bram Weinstein joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. I know we have some calls. Great insight. Great information. Wow. 1933. Since 1933, Washington has been called the Redskins. Could this be the year that it changes? Dan Snyder, being forced to change.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.